We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to The Uncontested Podcast, talking Oklahoma City Thunder basketball and the wider NBA.
Sam Presti said, lower the hatch, load up the cannon, and get the tank out rolling.
Catch new episodes after each Thunder game and every Sunday night.
This is a house of warning doctors.
Follow The Uncontested on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube to catch new content as it drops.
I mean, a cat and a dog connected together?
This is Lou Dort. You're listening to The Uncontested.
What is up? Welcome to The Uncontested Podcast. Coming to you live Sunday, November 21st. Our last group pod before Thanksgiving. Thank you guys for joining the live stream. We are live on Facebook, Twitter, and on YouTube. Shout out to everyone that's in the stream right now. We appreciate you. If you listen to this podcast on your podcast platform of choice, hey, thanks for checking out our show, man. We really appreciate it. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from. Drop that 5-star rating. Send it to us on social media, and we will ship you some Uncontested stickers. I have a lot going out tomorrow, so join the crew. I'm your host for the evening, Jacob Niffen. I've got my boy JD Silva along for the ride tonight.
I'm thankful for Lou Gens Dort on this Thanksgiving.
I've also got Taylor Peterson with me.
Aren't we all? And, you know, it's kind of coincidental that Nick said he was going to join the podcast. And then, you know, my Chiefs just so happened to beat the Cowboys this evening. And here we are, no Nick.
He forgot how to click a link. God bless his soul. God bless his soul. So, gentlemen, we got a lot to talk about tonight. Some people already in the chat, our guy Joseph, who's always a frequenter here on the live stream, shout out to Joseph, says he missed us last night. Yeah, unfortunately,
sorry,
the Uncontested crew had a lot going on last night, so we were not able to drop a post-game show after that Boston Celtics game. Our apologies. We pride ourselves on having shows for you guys all the time. So Scouts Honor won't happen again. We're here tonight. We're here tomorrow night after the Thunder take on the Atlanta Hawks. Taylor will be on that show. We are here Wednesday night.
A good one.
As you are trying to avoid the extended family on Thanksgiving Eve, go ahead and watch that Thunder versus, is it Rockets on Wednesday?
It might be. I have the
schedule. Thunder Rockets game Wednesday night. I think it's Rockets.
The 29th?
Oh, no, it's the Jazz. Yeah. It's the Jazz.
Yeah.
There you go.
Watch that Thunder Jazz game. Avoid your extended family and hang out with the Uncontested post game. You know you want to.
Nothing better.
And then Black Friday, after you have fought off the mobs for the Tickle Me Elmo, for the what were those? What was the little pocket pet thing you could get back in the 90s that people lost their shit over? It was on a keychain.
Neopets?
No, it was on a keychain. No.
Tamagotchi?
Tamagotchis. After you shank a grandma for a Tamagotchi. join the Uncontested Friday night, Black Friday, as we go live after the Thunder. Is that one the Houston Rockets game?
The 29th, yeah.
There you go.
There it is.
And
there
the first, back to back.
Oh, okay, okay.
There's Nick. So,
oh, and Nick Crane has there now learned how to click the link. He has joined the stream. Nick, what's up, man?
He's mourned. Technology is hard. Loss.
Technology is hard.
You missed Jacob talking about shanking grandmas on Black Friday. So.
You haven't missed much.
Yeah. Hey. Oh, my.
When those 50% deals are going on, before we get started tonight, I have to ask you guys, what's the craziest thing you've bought on Black Friday?
Ooh. So not the craziest, but I have the biggest thing I bought on Black Friday 2 years ago. I got our, like, I think it's like a 60-inch, like, really nice, like, what's above Ultra HD 4K? I got a very nice TV on a very nice deal with a very nice soundbar. Best purchase I've ever made in my entire life, hands down, right, on Black Friday. Two years ago.
I've never bought anything crazy, but my Black Friday is catching up on video games. Like, I almost never buy them when they first come out, but they're all like $25 on Black Friday, so like half off.
That's a good strategy. Yeah. Good call.
That's a good strategy.
I've literally worked like the last 7 Black Fridays.
That's true.
In retail.
I was working in Best Buy, which is like the worst place to work.
Black Friday. I'm finally out of the college retail duo. So I can be free, spread my wings, and probably just stay home. It's Black Friday.
Yeah, let me tell you something. There is nothing nicer than just sleeping in on Black Friday. I'm not a Black Friday shopper by any stretch of the imagination.
I'm an online shopper.
I've wanted to just be in the mob one time. I just want to choke slam someone for a Tickle Me Elmo.
So really, really fast. Tell us your craziest Black Friday story.
Yeah, from the crypt of Best Buy.
Yeah, the first one that comes to mind is this guy was just so hell-bent on stealing something that he just started like he took whatever the item was and immediately started pepper spraying employees. Like, spray and pray. Like, he closed his eyes and just ran around spraying it in front of him. And he caught 2 of our employees and then just ran out.
That's insane.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that was a wild time.
American consumerism is insane.
Yeah. Whatever it takes to get that item.
Whatever it takes.
Oh, my. That was a good one.
I can't remember any other good Black Friday fads. The Tickle Me Elmo, the Tamagotchi.
My most memorable one when I was a kid was the Wii.
Yeah, Furbies were a good one. Do you guys remember the Furby craze?
Yep.
I do realize I'm the oldest one on the pod. I need Justin here to be able to relate with me on Furbies.
I remember Furbies. I got you.
Beanie Baby phase.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Dude,
not.
White women would beat the shit out of some people for some Beanie Babies. Incredible. All right, let's talk some basketball. We have a lot to talk about today, guys. As the Thunder played, it feels like half their season schedule last week.
It's a busy week.
We have a lot more games coming up. We are going to compare some Thunder players to Thanksgiving dishes today. And God bless Sundays in the NBA. Whenever we do around the association, we are just gifted a platter of things to talk about, like Puke Walton and Malice at the Pizza Palace. We have so much to chat about around the NBA today. Malice at the Pizza Palace is maybe the best phrase I've ever heard uttered on a podcast ever. And Isaiah Stewart looked insane tonight. So we have a ton to talk about. Let's start with the Thunder week in review, though. OKC went 1-3 this week. Losses to the Heat, the Bucks, and the Celtics. The sole win came against the Rockets on a 34-point Lou Dort night, by the way. So, guys, I have some big takeaways that I wanted us to debate about this past week of Thunder basketball. The first one is that over these past 4 games, Lugens Dort has averaged 20 points per game on 40% shooting from 3. My question for you, is this a Lou hot streak or is it something more?
I think it's only
left
right
you all speechless.
No, I think it's we're waiting for Taylor to talk because this is his guy.
Which you guys know that I'm willing to go first, so I was just going to let you all get your negativity in before I talk about how Lou Dort is the greatest basketball player to play since Michael Jordan.
I think it's kind of in the middle of being a hot streak or like actually what he can produce. So he had the kind of slow start, especially from 3. Don't think that is anywhere near as bad as he could be. but I also don't think this recent hot streak is something that's sustainable. So if you like,
yeah, I don't think he's a 40% 3-point shooter either, right?
No, but I think if you
take it off right now,
if you take his current season averages, which is kind of the mush of the hot streak and the slow start, I think that like his current averages are probably actually the kind of player he is. Like if you were a box score watcher and didn't watch the Thunder all year and went and looked at Lu Dort's stats, like I think that's actually who he is.
Fair. So right now, 15 games into the season, Lou is averaging 16.6 points. He's shooting 30% from three. I think that's a little low. He is averaging 4.5 rebounds, 2 assists, and 1 steal.
Seems right. Maybe you're right.
Pretty spot on, but I think the 3-point percentage will continue to climb.
You hope.
Well, I hope, yes. But I also think when it's all said and done, I think it probably levels out somewhere closer to 35%.
What did he shoot last year?
He was 34 something, but I don't have it memorized.
34.3% last year on 6.3 attempts a game. He's at 7 attempts this year at 30%. So I bet he'll end right around last year, around that 34-35% range.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I think it's also important to note that this week he had 20 points per game. He had the 34-point explosion. But in those games, who did I mention they played? The Heat, the Bucks, the Celtics, and the Rockets. Against the Celtics, he guarded Jason Tatum. The Rockets, right. He guarded Jalen Green. The Bucks, he guarded Middleton. And I can't remember who he checked on the Heat because everyone was out for the Heat that night. But, I mean, posting like solid offensive numbers while taking on the most important defensive assignment, regardless of position each night.
I was going to mention that. And I think you also have to take into consideration, we'll get into SGA. I know we have this on our doc, but the fact that SGA and Giddey are getting so much defensive attention, especially when they're driving to the rim, Dort is essentially the one player who's making these opposing defensive pay, which is important. I think there's a lot to take from Dort's recent play, but also, you know, when the Thunder have other players who are able to make outside shots and able to expand the floor for SGA and Giddey, Dort's not going to have this kind of offensive load that he's had recently. So you have to take all of it into consideration, right? Like, I think he's going to continue to be able to produce. It's great to see him do what he's been able to do when SGA and Giddey have had more defensive attention. But moving forward, when we have another player who's able to knock down outside shots, that's going to open up the floor even more for guys like Lu Dort, for example. So all that to say, I think what he's shown is real, but like defenses don't really care because if Lu Dort's going to do, like, for example, what was it? Six straight games of 20 plus points. Opposing defenses are going to give us that because they don't want, That means Shea's not driving to the rim and having 20 plus points, or Giddey's not driving to the rim and having 20 plus points, right?
That's fair.
I think one thing to consider going back to the 3-point shooting, if I'm sure there's a website out here that has this calculated, but if you looked at Lu Dort's average distance from 3-point attempts last season, I think this season he's shooting deeper, which inherently should make his percentage drop unless he's just Steph Curry. Because he's shooting deeper, more difficult 3-point attempts this year.
Yep, definitely. And it feels like, especially recently, he's taking more self-created and off the dribble threes versus just pure catch and shoot.
Yeah, I would imagine his catch and shoot percentage is probably closer to what it was last year, but his overall percentage is down because he's taking more difficult shots.
Yeah, like he took one against Boston last night where he got an offensive rebound, dribbled it out, turned around and pulled up, which is like, it kind of caught me by surprise because it was very uncharacteristically Lu.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And so you don't want to be Robertson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this makes me want to ask Nick, because you're the one that I love chatting with this because we always bring it up. And I think you and I fall on different spots on the coin with this one. If this past week is not a trend with Lu Dort, and this is just kind of who he is, if he's going to shoot high 30s from three, 30 percentage from three, average close to 20 points a game, and be the defender we know he is, has your stance shifted on at all on how much he gets paid and if you keep him?
No, I'm still firm on not a penny more than Gary Trent Jr. The only reason... Even if 20 a game, like you mentioned, this is hot streak or whatever is actually real, it's not sustainable as the Thunder rebuild and he goes down the roster in terms of how many shot attempts he gets, because you can't score 20 points without shooting, you know, I think he's shooting probably 14 shots a game over this span, if not more. And he's not going to get 14 shots on a championship team probably. So you can't pay a guy based on what he's doing today. You got to pay him based on what he's going to do on the road.
I agree with that. Now the defense.
You agree with me? You wouldn't pay Lu Dort? What?
I'm not saying I wouldn't pay Lu Dort. I'm saying like the Gary Trent Jr. A little less than the Mikal Bridges contract, right? I think it's fair because to your point, Nick, I agree completely. Lu Dort's not going to be getting these amount of shot attempts up when the Thunder have that other, whatever you want to call it, the 1B player, the 1A player, even just bringing in another scorer on this team. I even think not only that kind of creator, but you know, let's say they draft a Paolo, for example, right? And then they're probably going to go and find, if they can't draft one, they'll try and find like a 3-point spacer. If they're able to do that, like, and find a shooter on the offensive end of the floor, Lu Dort's not going to get those attempts. But I think he's still worth paying because of his two-way versatility. I'm just not saying you should pay him more than, to your point, Nick, like, and Mikal Bridges. That's a pretty expensive contract.
Yep.
I think it's going to be an interesting case study with Lu, because I think the Thunder are still a couple of years away from really being at the spot right where they want to spend money and compete. Do they spend the money? They've already spent the money on Shea. Do you spend the money on Lu and kind of handicap yourself as far as your
long-term
clean
flexibility,
your clean cap sheet? But it also feels like Lu is, if you get rid of him, you're then trying to find a guy that's like Lu that can be your defensive stopper. It's going to be an interesting conundrum on Presti's team building philosophy and how
and
he wants to go about
it. Do you reward him? Right. We know how Presti has these relationships with these agencies and these agents. Do you reward him for taking on that, right? That essentially a two-way contract early on and then like a very low contract originally after that.
It almost feels like they need to pay Lu 20 mil a year to compensate to for the past 2.5 years where he's made 2 million total.
Exactly.
No,
Presti has a relationship with that.
I don't know. He made what, 1.5 mil, 2 mil last year, which is dollar for dollar the best contract in the NBA?
Yeah.
Is that a hot take?
No.
Because I don't feel like it's a hot take. It's got to be right up there with the dollar for dollar best contract in the NBA.
If you exclude the initial rookie scale deals, 100%.
Yeah. That's fair. I think that's fair.
Thought about guys like LaMelo who are just insane already.
Yeah, or Luka still on his rookie contract. Yeah. That's fair. That's 100% fair. But yeah. Okay. Next guy, let's take the other side of the coin here. And Silva, I want to start with you on this one since you didn't have a whole lot to say about Lu there. Past week, four games, Shea averaging 14 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, shooting 27% from the field, 22% from 3, 75% from the free throw line. We got a cause for concern here?
I don't think so. I'm not concerned, no. I expected him to struggle at times this season with all the offense, with all the defensive attention he's going to get every single night. Like he is the focus for the defense every night. And I think when we started this season, I think he struggled for a couple games, and then he was awesome in the stretch where, you know, the I'm him stretch. And we're only like 17 games into this season, I think, at this point. So I expect this will not be a long-term issue. It'll get easier the more comfortable he gets navigating double teams. And not a lot of times I just think he looks rushed. Like his shots look rushed. He's been taking some bad shots early in the shot clock. Specifically in our last game, not Boston, the game before that against the Bucks.
Milwaukee. Yep.
Yeah. That our offense kind of sputtered a lot whenever he came back in, because he felt like, oh, I have to take over. I have to do this, even though we were already doing fine. So, I don't think this is going to be a long-term issue for Shea. I think he's just kind of sorting out being a true number one option. And who knows, in the future, once we start, you know, really shooting for the playoffs again, I don't even know if he's going to have to be the number one option on this team, depending on who we acquire down the road. So I think this is just going to be a nice growing experience for Shea.
Yeah, I've felt a lot like, I'm interested if you guys have the same opinion here. I've felt a lot like Shea is forcing a lot. I feel like he is trying to play a lot of isolation basketball. There are even times where he'll get off the ball, be off ball while maybe Josh is handling, and then he'll catch a pass. And instead of catching it and shooting it in rhythm, he like pauses for a second and pulls it out and wants to ISO once more. Yep. And it feels like he's almost getting like out of the rhythm of the offense and trying to go one-on-one and playing in a crowd too much versus finding easy buckets, cutting off of other guys, playing off the ball, catching and shooting. It feels like a lot of stuff with Shea right now is very forced.
I agree with that. And look, like we mentioned this before, Shea has never been a great catch and shoot 3-point shooter, right? Like his 3-point shot where he's had success is being able to your point, Jacob, in isolation, being able to create separation himself off the dribble, whether it's a sidestep or a step back 3-point shot, and being able to create his own 3-point shot going. But like he's been trying to do that over this stretch. But I think the biggest thing is like, and I think he mentioned this, I want to say it was after the Bucks game, and his media availability, but he has two or three guys, often three guys, coming after him when he's driving to the rim at all times. And they know that they're going to let, for example, Lu Dort shoot from outside, shooting only 30, whatever it is, percent from three that you mentioned earlier. They're going to let Bazley either shoot from three or hesitate and then try and drive and make a move. Like, there's nobody to punish these teams from outside except maybe Muscala, who rested against the Celtics on the second night of a back-to-back, or JRE, who is maybe the one other player who can make these defenses actually like guard him and expand the defense and have defenders come out and guard his 3-point shot and respect him for that. I think another year from now, another 2 years from now, when we're bringing in these shooters, I think around guys like Giddey and SGA, that's going to help a ton. Not just for Shea, but also for Giddey. But like for this season, I don't know. I'm curious what you guys think. What is the answer? Like, what can Shea do to create more shots and opportunities for him when these defenses have two or three guys coming at him at once? He doesn't really have players that can help him out this season. Almost, I dare to say, by design, right?
I think. So, you know how sometimes, like, especially with good teams, there will be a stretch of adversity throughout the year where a good player is out for a stretch of time and other guys have to step up, and it's like a new role for them. It's a learning experience, and it ultimately ends up paying off for the team.
Yeah,
I think you got to think about this in a similar way. Does it really matter if Shea figures out a way to score on a triple team this year? No. Does it matter if his scoring numbers drop? No. But 3 years from now, when maybe he's a 1B or a 2 option, that's naturally going to go away. You can't triple team Shea whenever he's not the best player, but he's going to have the experience of going through an entire year and a half, 2 years of being that guy. And I think that these struggles and this adversity is going to ultimately pay off. And that's why I'm not concerned about it in the present moment.
Growing pains. Nick, you just described Devin Booker.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
You know, you just, that's very immediately when we started talking, that's what I thought. That's Devin Booker. Played on a shit Suns team for a long time, struggled, had defenses thrown at him all the time. And then now when he's got release valves and he's got a Chris Paul next to him and he's got a Mikal Bridges that can finish plays and a Cam Johnson who can stretch the floor, he's got more of that freedom and he's got all of those moves and everything in his bag and he's able to attack. Yeah, I think you're totally spot on there. I think Shea learned some of that last year as well. And this is where I think a lot of that stuff that he learned from Chris starts to come in play, right? Some of those like big picture ideas as well. So I'm not super worried about Shea. I would just like to see him play a little more within the flow rather than forcing so much, especially playing off the ball and catching and attacking off ball whenever defenses aren't completely geared up on him. Maybe they found a little something with Josh Giddey hitting, what was it, 4 or 6 threes last night against the Boston Celtics.
Maybe that can
be a little bit of a soften up the middle of that defense a little bit for him. That'd be nice as well.
But I think like finding that other creator, that shot creator, shot maker, is going to help out Josh Giddey.
Not as much the creator as the shot maker. And
shot maker.
Right. I could be way off on this, okay? I'm just throwing shit at the wall and trying to see what sticks. they might already have that guy in Trey Mann. Ooh. I mean, the dude can make shots. He's with the G League right now, nursing that sprained ankle, but he's played 30 minutes a game the past two G League games and scored 15 points each game on efficient shooting. I'm kind of excited to see some lineups that have Shea and Giddy and Trey all in the lineup.
Trey's going to help a ton, but I think long-term, he's going to be more of that six-man
the idea for him is having.
But if you're talking this season, I'm with you.
But if he's out there with Shea and he can be that release valve, that works.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Agreed.
Paul George. Absolutely.
All right. Last one. And I'll kick us off on this one because I have some thoughts. I got to get off my chest.
This is your segment.
Darius Bazley. This past week, it has been very, very not good. He had a stretch of
shit. Here we go again.
We had that stretch of like five games where Bazley looked incredible. I said he had the best game of his career against the Lakers. And then the roller coaster has gone back down the other end, capping off last night against the Celtics, a 1-of-11 performance where he had multiple layups where he just smoked them, just flat out missed them. He had very errant three-point shots that were banging off the backboard and not hitting rim. He had at least two drives that I counted where he caught the ball and I just knew he was going to put it on the deck and drive, and it ended up just awful. One of them was like an across-the-lane lefty floater that missed everything.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Guys, I have a bit of a prediction to make here tonight.
Here we go.
And I've kind of alluded to it to you guys. I think maybe by as early as the turn of the new year, we should be expecting a Darius Bazley trade that looks very similar to the Hamidou Diallo trade of last year, where they get off a guy for a second round pick or two, a player that is not in the long-term plans and is just going to ride out the rest of the season. And the reason I think that is because Bazley is up for a contract extension next summer. We know Sam Presti never lets guys make it to restricted free agency. He always extends or trades. The lone exception was Enes Kanter, who was acquired before he had the opportunity to do that. Are they ready to pay Darius Bazley whatever he wants, even if it's like $10 million a year? Are they ready to pony up cash for Darius Bazley when you have a total over the next 2 years of 10 draft picks that you're going to bring in? Out of 10 draft picks, the way the league is set up, we've got to assume 3, 4, 5 of those are going to be wings that could play the four. And so do you want to pay Darius Bazley draft $10 million a year and have to play him minutes because you paid him? Or are you going to try to move off of him and bring in more young guys that have talent and are on more cheaper and more team-friendly deals that you have a longer look at? Because to me, like logically, it just doesn't make sense to keep Darius Bazley around when you can go get another guy that plays the wing in the 20s in the draft and try them out, because like Darius isn't a piece that gets this team where you want to go. And maybe he can develop into that, but I don't have faith in that anymore.
And I think to your point, Jacob, like the thing that I keep thinking about, and don't take this as a counterpoint because I agree with you. I'm just thinking from a Thunder standpoint, they see these things like, for example, let's take a recent example, Bazley having four blocks. Was it four blocks against the Bucks, or blocking Giannis like two or three times, whatever he did, right? Also leading the team rebounds that game. I think he led the team in assists one of these past two games. Like, he keeps doing these other things that show up in the stat sheet that I'm just, I don't know, he keeps doing things that make you wanting more. Now, that worries me as a fan, because it almost feels like the Thunder are just personally invested in this player, right? Yeah. This kid who didn't go to college. We keep talking about it, right? The New Balance internship. It almost feels like Presti and Dignault personally want this kid to succeed, which I understand. But to your point, Jacob, when you have guys like, you know, it completely depends on where the Thunder end up picking in this draft. But there could be a prospect they pick in this draft that could be playing the same exact position and role as Darius Bazley. And I much would rather see Bazley come off the bench for this team.
And Bazley's, like, his defense has been better. I will admit that.
Absolutely.
Blocking shots has been a thing that he's really focused on. He's rebounding better.
But the consistency on both ends of the floor is just, it's not consistent.
Yeah.
For lack of a better term, right?
Would this is going to be, this one might light a fire under some people. I don't know.
Uh-oh.
Would the team's record be any different if Poku had started at four the whole year?
Not by a whole lot. Like, Darius Bazley and Poku, neither of them are.
I mean, Bazley is maybe a reason why they won one of those Lakers games, the way he defended and the way he played. But I mean, if Poku played the same minutes that Bazley played last night, I'm not sure he's not more productive.
Yeah.
There's probably more mistakes, but
he might give you more in the offensive end.
I just look at it. There's going to be roster turnover. There's going to be a lot of roster turnover because of all the draft picks they have and all the young guys they have to evaluate. And of course, there's going to be consolidation trades. But some guys are going to get rotated out, because that's the way a rebuild goes when you have literally half the league's picks for the next decade. And Darius Bazley is just a guy that I think needs to get rotated out.
I've talked about this before, not the long-term starter. And I think that we get caught up because we're trying to evaluate him as a starter, and he's not.
That's a fair
point.
It's not a, we've mentioned like, what if like a Paolo's there, or what if someone's there in the draft that could take his position? A, Darius Bazley is not going to hold them back from taking that player. And B, I don't think the Thunder front office thinks Darius is the long-term starting four. And so I'm not saying he's not going to get traded away, but I don't think they view him as a starter anyways. So if they think they could re-sign him at a reasonable bench rate, I think they're going to re-sign him in a heartbeat.
Nick, let me ask you this. Come turn of the year, 2022, is Darius Bazley still starting at the four for the Thunder?
Yeah.
You think so? You think he's starting at the four at the end of the season?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Taylor talked about the investment, and you hear it every game. You know, he's asking for these defensive assignments. He's asking for these new roles. Yes, he's up and down, but
I can ask for $1 million too. Doesn't mean I deserve it though, right?
Yeah, I keep thinking about that too, though, right? Like, I don't know. As Thunder fans, you see one end of the spectrum that say, you know, like,
yeah, there's so much behind the scenes that we don't know about.
Correct.
You know,
but you think of like, it, you know, you have the Thunder fans that think, oh, we'll draft Paolo this upcoming draft, and we'll be contending for a championship again. Then you have the like other end of the spectrum that honestly some of the Thunder media fall on. That's like, well, no, this is going to be a 3-4 year process. Like, listen to Sam Presti. And I see quotes that like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander made two nights ago, right? Like the disappointment and the losing, but understanding the situation. I don't know. I just think it's going to be somewhere in between. And I don't know if you can wait for like a, what's his name? Victor.
Wembanyama.
Yeah, Wembanyama. I don't know if you can like wait for it because you draft him two seasons from now, then you have to wait for him to develop.
You're taking the short.
I don't know. I'm curious. Right. So what happened? Right. So what happens to Shea? What happens to your point, Nick? Like a Beasley. Maybe all this is simply just to see what he is capable of this season, and then they make a decision when it comes to his contract. And it's not so much what I was saying, like their investment in him long term, as much as it is seeing if they should pay him that contract at the end of the season.
Yeah, we'll see. Nick, I'm going to go on record, and I'm going to say Darius Bazley is not the starting power forward by the end of the season. I have a hard time seeing them supplant him for somebody already on roster. I would be very shocked at this point if they decided to bench him for Poku, for instance, especially because they've been having Poku guards a lot instead of wings, which I find kind of interesting. I think it would have to be some sort of trade, either where they brought somebody in that's better at the four, or a trade that obviously got rid of Bazley. But I'm going to go on record. I'm going to say I do not think Darius Bazley is the starting power forward for the Thunder by the end of the year. And injuries do not count.
Hey, injuries, I will say this. I think JRE is a long-term power forward and not a center for this team.
Oh, interesting. See, I just think he's I'm on record with that too. He's a 10-year bench big for this team. Four or five, doesn't matter. He's the Nick Collison. I feel very firmly about that. Okay, I think that's enough for wrapping up this past week, unless there's any other players you guys want to touch on real quick. I know there's a handful of them out there.
Honorable mentions, no diving into them if you guys don't want to, but like JRE, I think was fantastic. And we cannot, I think, move on without just saying that Josh Giddey made a huge impact in both of these games against two elite teams in the East, even if it wasn't from his scoring. Again, I think finding that score, like I mentioned to you all, whether it comes from trade, whether it comes from the draft, I think it will come probably from the draft. But Giddey was fantastic on just crashing the boards, being aggressive, just really, really impressive.
Yeah.
I'm curious your guys' thoughts on those two guys.
My thoughts on I'll go with JRE. I'll talk about him. Things change very quick. I think if you're listening to this podcast a year ago, and probably not a year ago, if you're listening to this podcast halfway through last season, we're talking about, oh, wow, Tao starting point guard with Shea out. Like, is he actually good out of the rotation? Isaiah Roby was playing that off-night starting center in the absence of Horford when he was resting. Like, wow, is Roby a guy out of the rotation? Mm-hmm. It's early. I don't disagree with Jacob that JRE could be the 10-year backup center because the fundamentals are there. He just is the Thunder guy. But things change so dang quick.
Nick, you hit the nail on the head there. Totally. I'll touch on Josh Giddey real fast. The shooting burst against Boston was very nice. I think that's more of a blip on the radar than a turning of the corner. But his assist numbers have been low this past week, but looking at them almost feels like a box score mishap.
Yes.
The amount of plays 100%. He creates do not add up to the number of assists he gets on a box score.
Silva, what was that stat you sent us in the Slack about Giddey's potential assists?
Yeah. He registered 15 potential assists, but only in a game where he only got 4 actual assists.
Goodness.
Yeah. Just his ability to make the correct read every time. I like how more aggressive he's been trying to score the ball. Well, I think he is still struggling to find that balance. I still think he drives almost every time to play make rather than to score the ball. And I think whenever he finds the right balance there, he'll be really good. And if he can end up being a 37% 3-point shooter on decent volume, 3 or 4 attempts a game, we're talking like all-star level type of player, I think.
Yeah.
In his future. So,
or very close to it, especially like I said, when you add that other caliber player, like Shea and Giddey, that's going to open the floor for
very much so. I'm just ready for the inevitable. Darius Bazley is so bad that he helps this team tank to Paulo, who is his replacement. The irony of that story just, I find amusing. Okay, gentlemen, let's move on. per Thanksgiving week tradition. If you're a sports podcast and you're recording a show Thanksgiving week, you got to do a Thanksgiving segment, right? I don't know if Silva has some sort of turkey sounder for us.
No. If I could make a turkey noise, I'd do that for you, but I can't do that.
Oh, well, you already brought it up, so let's hear it.
Just what do they gobble?
Yeah.
I'm not going to gobble.
Give us a gobble, buddy. Come on.
I'm not going to gobble on the... What? Let's see what I have here. Yeah, no. How about...
You all better repent!
That's all you get.
That's a Black Friday shopping in Walmart sounder right
100%.
There.
So we are going to compare Thunder players to Thanksgiving sides, Thanksgiving dishes. Before we do this, though, everyone's got to get on the record. Silva, what's your go-to Thanksgiving dish?
Maybe controversial. Broccoli cheese casserole.
Ew.
Okay.
Yep, there it is.
Gross.
The face Nick has is. Nick, what is that?
That's mine.
Yes. Oh,
what?
Okay, so is yours, it's like broccoli cheese, but there's rice in there too?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's my brother's move as well. He yeah, gets his own separate Slide container.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Ugh.
Taylor, what's yours?
So, like, I mean, obviously, I love my ham and my rolls, but the biggest thing is starting like two generations ago, my great grandmother on my mom's side started to make these like homemade noodles that have like a gravy with them. We would use that for the gravy on top of the, we would have gravy too, but typically we'd use that for the gravy on top of the hot, or the potatoes, the ham, the turkey. So the homemade noodles,
okay,
that my great grandmother made. It's my
nice,
go-to.
Nice. I'm going with the classic mashed potatoes, man.
Can't beat them.
Give me some mashed potatoes and gravy. Do you guys have mac and cheese at Thanksgiving?
God, I hope so.
Occasionally,
my family never does. My family never does.
We'll do it on occasion.
It's kind of disappointing. I also feel like, never mind. I'm not going to say that one. We'll save that for off the pod. So, Thunder players as Thanksgiving dishes. I'll get us started. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is the turkey. He's the main dish.
Easy.
You got to have
easy.
It.
Yep.
Regardless of what your Thanksgiving plate looks like, it's going to have some turkey on there. You always got to have some Shea in your lineup.
Hey, if we have some turkey, Jacob, you need some gravy. And Josh Giddey, who was drafted in this previous draft, is that gravy.
He makes other dish better.
I'm not saying he's going to be the ham, the other side dish, the 1B to the 1A, but he's the gravy that goes on top of just about all of it. And that's
I like it.
All right. I'm going for it. Alexei Pokushevsky is just a can of cranberry sauce.
Oh, get out of here.
He's on the table. In theory, he could fit with a lot of things, but I personally don't know how it always fits with my turkey. Like, what do you use cranberry sauce for? I don't know. But if I ever do decide to take the plunge and try cranberry sauce, maybe it'll be good.
It's sweet. It's enjoyable, but it doesn't really fit with the rest of the plate. I get you. Yep. I like that, Silva.
See, I had Darius Baisley as my cranberry sauce because it's just not good.
I had Poku as a canned item as well. A can of beer. He makes things a lot. He makes a lot of things fun. But outside of that, you don't really know what you're getting.
He doesn't provide much. Substance.
Some empty calories.
Yeah,
I like that.
He's just the political tension at the dinner table.
Yep.
All right, I've got.
He makes your family interaction more enjoyable.
Yes.
There
it's
you
fun
go.
To talk about.
Maybe it's better because it's from Europe.
Oh, okay. There you go. Maybe he's a Stella. What's it?
I'm going with, I guess this one could. I was going to say Ty Jerome is my cranberry sauce because the dude's just got sauce. He's got sauce all over the court. But
that's a brown gravy.
Yeah, we could go like some brown gravy.
Because not the white kinda, gravy, but the brown.
It's kind of saucy. It's kind of saucy.
I like Ty Jerome as the rolls, like the buttered rolls.
Oh, see, okay. I got one for the buttered rolls. You go ahead, you Silva, though.
I want to hear yours.
Okay. So I got Lou Dort as the rolls, right? He's a necessity for every Thanksgiving dish. He's a necessity for every championship contender. But he's a little sweet right now. When you don't have, again, that 1B to the Shea, which is the turkey. We don't have the ham, right? He's not going to like complete the meal, but you need him for a full championship Thanksgiving dish.
This makes me so curious about who your ham is, Taylor.
I mean, I
the ham Victor is Paulo Banchero.
The yeah. Paulo is a ham. Maybe the Chet is a ham. I don't know. Maybe he's a ham young shortage. Ham.
Chet needs a ham.
I've got another one.
We'll see.
All right, let's hear it, Nick.
Gabriel Deck is the dish whenever you're going through the line and you think, who the hell brought this?
100%. 100%.
I love that.
I love that. That is spot on. Trey Mann is a dessert. He's like one of the, he's like your pecan pie.
I like that.
Mm, yeah. He's sweet. He's got a lot of things that you really like, but you just don't know if you have enough left over to take the plunge. There's maybe just a little too many guards on this team.
But it looks
so good. I want that slice of pecan pie. They got to find a way to get that on the plate, man.
Well done. Well done. You mentioned potatoes, Jacob. JRE is my potatoes. He is the meat and the potatoes. He's the fundamentals. You need a mashed potatoes on this team. That's JRE long term.
I like that. I really like Taylor's one about Giddy being the gravy just because it makes every dish better.
Good. That was so good.
That's a solid one.
I want to say the JRE and the Giddy go to the same draft class, they go together.
Yeah.
The chemistry this year is the mashed potatoes and the gravy.
I like it. Who do we have for our sweet potato?
Sweet potato, that's tough.
And we haven't got Mike Muscala on the menu yet. And I feel like we really need to work him in.
He's a vet.
Him in. It's like a deviled egg.
The vet, and he's playing very well down low. On both ends of the floor, he's the stuffing.
I don't know how the hell you just tied those two things together.
He's just a staple.
Is he like, I don't know, I think I'm going to switch guys here. Coleslaw. I think that's Derek Favors.
Some people like it, it never really does well.
It gets half eaten, and it's like, it's not that important because some people forget it's there half the time.
Yeah.
It's like almost the Gabby Deck dish.
Yeah. Right. Shout out to Eddie Radosovic. But what about the green bean casserole? What do you guys think? Is that a Muscala? You know, like it's really good, but not everybody has one.
I personally avoid the green bean casserole.
Same. I'm anti GBC.
I kind of like it. I'm not like all aboard like some people are, but I like it.
I guess it would fit because I feel like all white families have a green bean casserole.
You're right.
And Mike Muscala is maybe the whitest guy on the team.
Fair. Shout out to Bob, my loyal follower who retweets all my tweets.
Good guy, Bob.
Robert Muscala.
All right. We have any other side dishes for Thanksgiving? I got to ask you guys. How do you make your turkey on Thanksgiving? Are you guys like a roast it? Do you fry it? Are you popping that bad boy in the smoker?
You just
buying it pre-made from the store?
I just show up and it's there.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
I haven't reached the stage of my life yet where I'm making a whole ass turkey.
But if I were to make the turkey, it would be smoked.
I'm making a smoked turkey on Wednesday.
My man. Yeah,
Nick, do you have a preference on turkey?
I don't like turkey. I like ham. I don't even touch turkey.
Me too.
But
I'm with you.
A Friendsgiving today, and they did both smoked and fried.
Oh, like well one turkey cooked, fried,
no,
and smoked, or two separate turkeys?
They got one turkey. They took the breasts off and smoked that on a green egg, and then took the remainder of the turkey and dipped it in one of those pots of like boiling whatever, and then dipped it in and fried it.
Well done.
Very good.
All
and didn't burn
that.
Their house down, apparently, so that's good.
Did not. Happened outside.
There you go. It's always a good plan.
I like that idea.
I think I'm with you on your ham, that preference there, especially with the Caucasian side of my family. I have to like avoid the white meat turkey, or I feel like it's so damn dry.
Yeah.
Like borderline giving me radiation poisoning.
Look, I love my family, but the food at Thanksgiving is whiter than the people. And I'm like, bro, we fought wars for spice. You can use it. It's okay. I give you permission. All right, Silva, it is time for you to take us on a trip around the association.
I don't even know where you're sitting at.
Lots of stuff around the association, gentlemen. Let's start with the malice at the Pizza Palace. Lakers versus Pistons tonight, Sunday, November 21st, during a routine free throw. Isaiah Stewart attempts to box out LeBron James, who tries to, it looks like, slap Isaiah's arm out of the way very forcefully and hits Isaiah right in the eye. Profuse amount of bleeding all over his eye, his nose, his lips. Isaiah steps to LeBron. Everyone gets in, splits it up. Isaiah comes back. They split it up again. They get my guy to the tunnel, and he breaks out like a wild animal, charges down the court, is barreling over people. Cade Cunningham is laying on his back as Isaiah Stewart again tries to fight. They finally corral him, get him into the tunnel, and he runs into the tunnel looking like he's going to make a loop and come around the other side. This was not your typical hold me back because I want to swing. I want to put on a show.
He was going to kill that dude.
Beef Stew wanted all of the smoke. We have screenshots of Russell Westbrook squaring up like the Irishman from Notre Dame.
He was bad about it.
Wild stuff in Detroit.
The favorite tweet I saw was Jason Concepcion compare Isaiah Stewart to the Winter Soldier. Completely unhinged.
That is true. So, Nick, give me an over under for how many games Isaiah Stewart will be suspended.
I'm going to go with 5.5.
Oh, that's I'm taking the under.
Really?
Is that high? I feel like that's high.
I was going to say 5 too.
I mean, who really is just thinking
I was thinking 3.
That wasn't your average thing. That
was think of like Morris and like Jokic, who like each got suspended like 2 games and 1 games. NBA, they don't want their I don't know. I think he'll be suspended one.
But who is he going after?
Yeah,
if he was LeBron, going after. That, he was going after.
I wish, point of contention. I wish he would have put LeBron in a chokehold and just
how
just
many
went to town.
How space. Many games does LeBron get?
Zero. Does
LeBron, if I put zero. The over under for Nick's LeBron point, at 1.5,
to Nick's point, 0. I'm going under. He won't miss a damn thing.
Probably 0.
He's missed enough. He's missed enough recently with his, his little boo boo that he had.
I think my favorite tweet was someone was surprised Anthony Davis didn't get injured during the shoving.
Oh my god!
I think LeBron gets 2, and I think Isaiah Stewart gets 3.
Okay.
I don't think Russ will get 1, even though Russ tried to square up.
Well, of course he did.
That was
the Lakers come back from a 20-point deficit to win the game.
Hey, good for them! It's about time they won a game.
Yeah, I've tweeted. I said if Isaiah Stewart got his hands on someone, that would have been the second ass whooping that the Lakers took tonight. Apparently, I was wrong. The Lakers, we could do a whole podcast over that.
Oh, my God. The Lakers are a shit show.
If you made me pick right now between Lakers in the Western Conference Finals or Lakers miss the playoffs, I think I'm going to miss the playoffs.
Wow.
They look bad.
They look bad.
They'll make the playoffs.
So, let's round table it right now. More likely to happen, Lakers in the Western Conference Finals or Lakers miss the playoffs, Silva?
Oh, that's tough. That's tough. I would say I think they're going to make the playoffs, but I don't think they're going to make the Western Conference Finals. So
you got to choose one. Shit or get off the pot, buddy. Which one is it?
I'm shitting right now. Miss the playoffs.
Okay. More likely to miss the playoffs. Miss the playoffs or they're in the Western Conference Finals?
If you don't make a sounders of all of us. If you don't make a sounder of shitting on the pot.
Or I'm shitting right now.
Nick going Western Conference Finals. I like it. Taylor, you going Western Conference Finals or miss the playoffs for the Lakers?
Western Conference Finals. I will live and die by the West wreck, which will kill me.
Dude, Jacob,
I am ready to die.
Have you watched LeBron James in the past 20 years?
I know.
He'll turn on. I know. Matters. I know.
Have you watched Tom Brady? It's all the same. It just happens.
Exactly.
The Patriots every year, nah. The Cavs every year, nah.
I got the Golden State Warriors in the NBA Finals, y'all. I just went on record on November 21st. I've got the Dubs.
Clay
in the
coming back and like.
He's back to practicing.
A month, which seems like later than if he's doing 5-on-5 practices.
Yeah,
like,
they have the runway though. Yeah, they're good.
Right, exactly.
Next up, we got to talk about Puke Walton.
Puke for Luke.
Luke Walton gets fired today. The league just all at the same time saying, huh? If you're going to fire him 15 games in the season, why don't you fire him in July and run a full-on coaching search? But Kings are going to Kings. This comes after the Kings lost to the Utah Jazz last night as a fan sitting courtside projectile vomits on the sideline and just kind of sits there chilling. Have you guys watched the video?
I watched it too many
unfortunately,
times.
Unfortunately, yes.
Too many times.
I will not watch it again. But
that
yes,
it was a lot of vomit.
It was a lot.
A lot of vomit. So, Nick, before we talk about the Kings aspect, I got to ask you, besides courtside at an NBA game, where's the worst place you can puke at?
Oh, boy. I have one.
How about on an airplane running to the bathroom because there's so many people in close proximity that you're guaranteed to spew on a lot of people at one time?
Hey, my fiance, she was my fiance at the time, now my wife.
threw up
airport sushi on a flight.
Oh.
But it was pretty self-contained in the little bag. She never ate airport sushi ever again.
I'm talking like you're running to the bathroom down the aisle, and then it just comes.
Yeah. Silva, where's the worst place to throw up than courtside on an NBA basketball court?
I keep thinking about. So I was gonna say in the middle of a flight. I'm gonna say maybe waiting to scan your ticket entering the arena. In the massive crowd of people just puking all over the security guard that's about to check you. All over everyone in line.
Yeah, that's pretty gross. Taylor, where's the worst place to puke than courtside?
Well, look, back in my glory days, there was this time back at the fraternity house on the University of Tulsa campus where I may have thrown up enough that I was awoken at one point one night in the men's bathroom with my forehead leaning on the, like, one of those big cylinder garbage cans to some, like, sorority girl waking me up saying, hey, why are you passed out? It's, like, 3 a.m. You're, like, passed out on this trash can. And took me back to, like, one of the areas to fall asleep. Yeah, I fell asleep and puked apparently a lot before that in a fraternity bathroom in a very gross fraternity house. On the University of Tulsa campus. So that would be my...
That's pretty gross.
It was bad.
I have to go with my personal hell, which is someone throwing up in a classroom.
Ugh.
I've experienced before. Bad. It is awful. It was in the middle of a test. Girl just got up, walked over to the trash can, and all over the place. And I'm not a sympathy puker, but if I hear and I see, and especially if I smell the puke, I'm joining the club.
Yeah.
I can't be a passive observer. I got to get in on the action.
Hey, speaking of puke and the Kings, bringing this full circle, this is what I was looking for. The Kings moved to Sacramento in 1985. This is from Wiseman Burner on NBA subreddit. They moved to Sacramento in 1985, and since then, they've had 18 different head coaches. Yuck. Of those, Luke Walton was the second highest winning percentage coach. The first being Rick Adelman at 395 and 229 losses, Luke Walton at 68 and 93 losses. Just going through the names, you have Reggie Tooth, Phil Johnson, Gary St. Jean, Dave Yeager, George Carl, Mike Malone way down there. Some fun names.
George Carl tweeted about this.
I saw that.
Saying that Alvin Gentry was the right move and that Vivek Ranadive, the owner of the Kings, should sell the team.
I think that's probably pretty universally agreed upon. Kings have missed out on the playoffs for, is it 20 years now? 21 years now? They go through coaches about every 2 years. I have no doubt that they're going to bring in Alvin Gentry. They will make him interim head coach. Then they will make him the permanent head coach. And in 2 years, we will be back at this process. It is an organizational catastrophe for the Sacramento.
No wonder fans have thrown up.
Yeah, no, I'd throw up if I was a Kings fan. Man, and we know a lot of really nice Kings guys. The guys that run the Kings Pulse podcast, Brendan Nunes, great, great dude. He's had me on the show multiple times. Those Kings fans don't deserve this crap, man. Like, they deserve a franchise that is competent. At least somewhat competent, you know. I feel bad for Kings fans who have been loyal to that team for so long. True. And just have to deal with the mire of bullshit that they've had to deal with. That sucks. Our last one. Back in the day, the Process 76ers started 0-18 before winning their first game in the 19th game of the season to make them 1-18. The Rockets are currently at 1-15. Will they match that Process Sixers at 1-18?
But I thought the Thunder were the black eye of the NBA.
I know. The Rockets' next three, Boston, Chicago, and Charlotte. Will they sneak a win in there to get better than the 1-18 Process Sixers start, Nick?
Not a chance.
You don't think there's a chance one of those teams slips up?
The only team that slipped up was a Thunder against them.
Even a blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then. clock is right twice a day.
Here's the thing. I think this is a good example to throw out there for the difference between the Thunder, what the Thunder are doing and what the Rockets are doing. You can get all these like great on paper draft prospects, even if they like aren't like, you know, top five prospects, whatever it may be. And then you can have a culture. You can have your head coach have to sit out for a weekend road trip because he's about to have his wife's about to have a baby.
I wonder if the baby's here yet. Nick,
he better be named Dort. Be named Dort or Poku.
No insight from Nick on if the baby's
Poku.
Born.
Poku Dagnall. Dort Dagnall.
Double D.
Regardless, I think it says a lot about what the Thunder culture, their implementation of their systems compared to what the Rockets are doing, which is
two franchises at two very different spots.
To your point, Jacob, throwing shit on the wall and seeing what sticks.
Yep.
That's the Rockets.
Totally agree.
To Nick's point, I agree. I don't see how they beat either of those three teams, Boston, Chicago, or Charlotte.
Silva, you think they get one?
Hell no.
I hope they get one because we need them to start climbing those tank standings.
Fair.
We know how that works. You don't have to be the worst team.
That's true. That is true. Silva, I've got a take, and then you can fire up our outro music and get us out of here.
Okay, cool.
For all the hand-wringing done after the draft, is JRE already better than Alperen Şengün?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
No.
All about it. Yes.
He's played better so far. But
no, Şengün, we're also